Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinema D'Amore. I'm one of your hosts, James Reinhardt.
I'm Justin Morgan.
And we are joined by a guest. Please welcome back Jim Cataluzos to the podcast.
Thank you, guys. Always happy to be a part of this show.
Yeah, thank you for being on. This month's theme, I actually got the idea from a conversation with you. We were talking kaiju movies, and I decided to make the theme of this month kaiju, which ended up working out because Kong vs. Godzilla is also coming out this month. So, you know, the timing ended up working out. So we're going to be talking about a lot of giant monster movies, and then we're going to talk about, Godzilla vs. Kong, not Kong vs. Godzilla, but we're going to be talking about that too whenever that comes out.
I have a hard time envisioning you and Jim having any conversation about kaiju at all.
I know, right?
It doesn't seem plausible, no.
We have our fun moments. Last time I saw James, he was wearing a cool Destroy All Monsters shirt. Had a good lineup, but it forgot a couple monsters. Well, you know, cameo monsters anyway. Baragon and Varan were not on the shirt, but they were barely in the movie. So I'd say that's...
Let it slide.
Baragon does not get enough love. You know, this movie is like his big moment.
He did get a reboot. He got a remake in 2003 for GMK. So that shows some love.
Yeah, I guess as a kid, like the monsters like Baragon and Varan, those were always the ones I was most curious about because like they weren't really in anything. I kind of want to know more about them. And Varan, I didn't end up seeing his movie until last year. But Baragon, you know, his only other appearance prior to Destroy All Monsters was this, Frankenstein Conquers the World. And then he was a background monster in Destroy All Monsters. And in Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah in 2003, from what I understand, originally the director wanted the monsters in that to be Baragon, Varan, and Anguirus, but the studio stepped in and wanted Mothra and King Ghidorah because they're more recognizable.
Well, for me, Frankenstein Conquers the World. It's kind of like King Kong Escapes. It was one that throughout my childhood I was real curious about, and I knew very little about. But there was no VHS for it. It was almost, you know, I called it when I was a kid those lost Toho movies. They really weren't lost. Older generations saw them in theaters, saw them on TV, but us growing up, we didn't get those VHS releases. So. I didn't get a chance to see it for a long time, but it was on for me. I first found out about it on a 1998 calendar that my dad got me from Toho, and it had pictures of non-Godzilla movies, and that was one of them. And I had no idea what it was I was looking at when I was a kid. And slowly, I learned about it through G-Fan magazine. It was kind of a mystery when I was a kid.
When I remember hearing about this pretty early when I was a kid, I was already kind of into like Universal Monsters and stuff, and I was watching, there were tons of Frankenstein specials on TV leading up to the release of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. So I watched a bunch of those as a kid. I just kind of ate them up, and they, you know, all those specials had like, you know, a segment on history of Frankenstein in movies, and a couple of them touched upon this, you know. And I was also at that point, I was into Godzilla movies too. So as a kid, I was like, wait, there's like a Japanese Frankenstein movie where he's like big, like a, you know, like, so it really intrigued me. And then TNT used to show tons of old Toho movies on all the time as part of Monster Vision. And they showed this. And I remember as a kid, I wasn't really that into it. And then later, as I got older, got more into Toho and Godzilla, you know, I found out, you know, Destroy All Monsters, you know, the other monsters I wasn't really familiar with, like Varan and Baragon and Gorosaurus, I read more about them. I found out Baragon was in this and rewatched it. Still wasn't really that into it, but I just rewatched it, you know, last night for this podcast for the first time as an adult, and I really dug it, actually. I don't know why it went over my head as a kid, but as an adult, I'm like, this movie's kind of cool.
My history on this movie is I watched it last night. I've seen War of the Gargantuans a few times over the years. and I had never watched this. I didn't know it had anything to do with this movie at all. I just kind of went along with the fact that that these like two Frankenstein monsters just kind of like already existed, and I was like, I'm cool just with that setup, like just jumping right into it. I like the story for this, though. I like how it was Hiroshima, like, head on, and it had like a weird I don't know, World War II, the Germans. Did you take it like the Germans were experimenting with Frankenstein, or did they happen to get like the legit Frankenstein from Frankenstein lore?
How I took it was like the Germans had been experimenting on the legit Frankenstein monster from Frankenstein lore. It's interesting in this movie how every single character is aware of Frankenstein and the monster and his history. There's no, they never stop to explain it to you. They assume that you know, but every character in this movie treats it like it's common knowledge, like it's history. But this is how I took it as, is the Germans had gotten their hands on the original Frankenstein monster and it was experimenting on him. And, you know, they kind of only had his heart. And then
Because when I watched this, it was on archive.org.
That's where I watched it too.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yes. So when I watched it, I wasn't quite sure. I obviously didn't have the Japanese version, so I didn't know how much might have changed.
The only thing that changes is the ending. In the Japanese version, there's a second fight after the Frankenstein monster and Baragon. He kills Baragon, but then a giant octopus shows up to fight him, and it's kind of just random. It really doesn't make much sense.
Yeah,
so it's like the Goonies, they just axed it.
I read that when I was doing research on this, and watching it, like watching it now, like the fight after Baragon seems like such a natural sort of endpoint. Especially I really dug the Baragon fight. They're just kind of beating the fuck out. Then like the fact that, you know, there's this forest fire happening around it, like just adds like another layer of, you know, some sort of climactic action to it. But yeah,
it's really quite brutal too.
Yeah, it is. It is like a really hard hitting kaiju fight. And I think what adds to it is the fact that, you know, Frankenstein's not a guy in a costume. It's, you know, a guy in makeup, but it's still like a physical actor fighting. You know, he gets a lot more movement, so you get a much more physical fight between him and Baragon.
And then he snaps that MF-er's neck.
My favorite part is he does a I always like geek out whenever wrestling moves happen in movie fight scenes, and he does a fucking F5 to Baragon, which was a wrestling move that didn't come about until like 2003.
Sounds like it's a wrestling move that came out in, what is this, the 60s? 65 or something?
Yeah. But it's like a really, I thought this was a really interesting plot line for a Frankenstein movie where, you know, the monster is existing, you know, he's always regenerating, but they have him down to like his heart that they're studying. And then that heart is in Hiroshima when the bomb gets dropped and the monster gets reborn, but he's irradiated. So he's growing at this accelerated rate. I thought that was a really interesting concept.
Well, only for a little bit, like he's malnourished or something. Mm-hmm. Cause isn't it, it's like 2 decades later or something.
Yeah.
When they finally find him, and then he's, what do they, I don't know. They started feeding him. And then when they made him more healthy, he was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
He ate his Wheaties. He grew up.
I like in the beginning of this movie, the fact that the first scene, barely a word is spoken. You don't hear any dialogue till the Germans are on the sub. And then, but your whole point gets across. I mean, they could have done it even without the submarine dialogue. You know that they're going to the Pacific. It's World War II. All you need is just flags and national crests on everyone's uniforms. And you know that the Germans are giving something to the Japanese. And, It was pretty bold, I think, for the year it came out, to outright show Hiroshima, because that was probably still pretty strong in Japanese mind. I would think that would be, like, for us, having a sci-fi movie take place, you know, being made now, and the opening incident being, well, the Frankenstein monster's heart got buried under the rubble of 9/11. You know, people would probably, you know, have some choice words on that matter. It's a pretty strong moment.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, too. And I guess this was the first kaiju movie to deal with Hiroshima head-on instead of just having it as subtext or whatever. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting how they're handling it. You're right there as part of the story.
It kind of surprised me because I know that there was censorship set up in place by the Americans that occupied Japan right after World War II, and they were basically not allowed to talk about that kind of stuff at all. So I found it very surprising that they talk about it head on, because I thought it was like more in the 70s, you know, early 80s that they kind of started opening up to that kind of narrative again.
Yeah.
Or at all, I guess.
Yeah.
I like how, well, one of the interesting things is Sam, what the hell is his name? Nick Adams. I kept wanting to say Sam Adams. Nick Adams. Nick Adams outright says, well, this kid is clearly Caucasian. And you're looking at the actor, it's clearly a Japanese actor with the Universal Frankenstein makeup brow and the Universal Frankenstein kind of square head on top. And I'm curious why they even bothered to say that. I mean, it starts off with the Frankenstein monster heart. Who knows why they even bothered to mention that. They didn't even really need to mention it at all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know they wanted to go for a Universal Frankenstein look, but obviously because of copyright, they couldn't. But I mean, yeah, the makeup is interesting, though. Also, I guess we should add with, you know, Nick Adams, who's an American actor who appears in quite a few Japanese films, that this was like the first joint production between America and Japan. It wasn't solely a Toho production. It was produced by both of them, both America and Japan, after the success of King Kong versus Godzilla.
Yeah, and I guess late years down the road, in Godzilla versus Monster Zero, I bet that was a fun reunion between Nick Adams and Kumi Mizuno showing up again, playing love interests of sorts.
Yeah, I'm rewatching all of the old Godzilla movies, the Showa era, and it's really interesting. They reuse like the same 10 actors in every movie, but in different roles. But yeah, Nick.
That's Toho.
Yeah, and Nick Adams, he.
It's like the BBC. It's like Hammer.
Yeah, yeah. Which I think a lot of old movie studios were like that. They had the same actors that they just kind of, cycled them through playing different characters. It's really jarring seeing the actor that plays Dr. Serizawa popping up in other stuff, in other roles in the Godzilla movies.
Yeah, Nick Adams was only 38 when he passed away.
Yeah, I looked it up because I knew he died young. He died of an accidental overdose. But yeah, I know he made some stuff in America, but obviously, as a kid, I only knew him from his Japanese work, because he was in Invasion of the Astro Monster and this. And I want to say he was in one more that I'm forgetting.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking of Kumi. My bad.
Yeah, like I feel like he's in another kaiju film that I'm overlooking. But yeah, then I saw him in, he was in like a Lovecraft adaptation of Boris Karloff. That's one of his American films. That's another one I've seen him in. But yeah, this one I was reading more because I was really curious about how this came about, and I was reading about it. And I guess they originally, after King Kong versus Godzilla, they had announced a Godzilla versus Frankenstein movie that would be the follow-up. But then they decided to just put in a new monster which is Baragon. But when watching this movie, for the most part, I was like, this is a pretty decent Frankenstein movie by itself. Like, how does Baragon come into it? And Baragon literally just comes out of nowhere. Like, he just appears to, cause trouble. And that's, and then obviously leading up to the final fight scene.
Yeah, I guess I thought that too. It's almost kind of shoehorned in because they needed a monster fight. You can't just have one. You could have one giant monster destroying cities, but they've done that. They need some sort of fight. I think it would have been better if Baragon may have been some sort of childhood pet of Frankenstein's monster as a kid when he was the feral child. Maybe he bonds with some sort of lizard kind of creature, and because he's at the Radioactive Institute, something happens to the lizard and it gets exposed to radioactivity, and years down the road it becomes this giant creature. So now the kid has to fight the giant creature to save humanity, because the giant lizard keeps eating people. Kind of like what ended up happening in War of the Gargantuas. He has to fight his own clone brother because the brother keeps eating people.
That's interesting. That would have worked because I remember when I watched this as a kid, I'm like, oh, where'd this other monster come from? Watching as an adult, I'm just like, oh, Baragon comes out of nowhere. And there's like a little bit of intrigue where Frankenstein starts getting blamed for the destruction that Baragon's you're reeking, but Frankenstein himself never really reacts to that. There's a lot like that one shot when they're looking in the cave and they see his glowing horn. I like that shot a lot. And Baragon is this tunneling monster with the glowing horn. I like that concept behind him a lot. And like I said, the final fight scene, I think, is a really good kaiju fight. Though at that point, like, the main characters are looking for the Frankenstein monster, and the Frankenstein monster is now like the size of a building, and he's hanging out in a cave and he has a campfire going. And I'm like, so the being scale of this monster, this campfire would be massive. Like, everyone could everyone would see it, but they're all just like, oh, we can't find the monster.
The cave entrance should be massive.
Yeah, like, this cave should be gigantic, but then the fact that he has a campfire going, I'm like, people would see the smoke for miles. Then obviously
dude was like peeking out of the trees, almost as tall as the trees, if not taller, and nobody noticed him.
Yeah, he was good at sneaking around.
Yeah. I love the effects with him in the trees and like throwing a whole tree at a bird.
So apparently, I was also reading this. The set designers didn't know which trees were going to be uprooted, so they had to individually make roots for every single tree in the sets.
Oh, that's so unfortunate.
Yeah. I felt so bad for them. I was like, oh, you poor bastards.
And did some decent blue screen effects on this one. I was pretty impressed in the miniatures.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no. That was, I was just saying it works. I think they did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Damn director Hondo.
I
he just wants us to put roots on everything because we don't know what trees are uprooting.
Another fun fact about the director Hondo is the scene where Baragon attacks the farm and there's that really bad fake horse. I guess like that was his call because he thought it would be funny if the horse was fake. And apparently he did that a lot. He put weird shit in there because he thought it'd be funny. And the crew was always like extremely confused by that.
That's kind of a bummer on a directorial standpoint. And you're putting stuff in there that you think will be funny because it obviously looks fake. I feel like that undermines your own effort.
Probably, yeah.
I'm not sure.
Did you read the script? I'll put a fake horse in if I want to.
Here's a fun one. When I saw on Facebook, James, that you were watching the movie last night, the image that popped up, I think, was the old poster for Frankenstein Conquers the World, mm-hmm. Where it says he rolled the seven wonders of the world into one. The image they use for Baragon on that, for this American poster, is clearly a Yeongari, the Korean monster. You look at that, poster, and then you look at, type in the original Yongari Monster from the Deep, which came out a year later, the image is almost identical. It's insane.
Hmm.
It makes you wonder, did South Korea, did they rip off this poster in some sort of way for just a generic monster with a horn? Because this, the poster itself is 1 year older than the movie, Yongari. So
maybe, I don't know. I've actually never seen Yongari. It's one of those ones I've always been curious about, but that's one I haven't seen.
And that's one that's worth its own riff tracks. It's so cheap.
Yeah, I hear it's pretty terrible. Didn't they do like a remake in 98 to coincide with the Godzilla remake?
Yep. Which I... Yeah, 2001. I'm not really... It's kind of its own thing, too. It's... And I've only ever seen bits and pieces of it. It was on TV once.
Yeah, I remember it was on Sci-Fi Channel, and I taped it, but I never got around to watching it.
It's called Reptilian in American audiences.
Yeah, I remember that now.
I have no knowledge of this movie.
It's a Korean Godzilla ripoff. And they made a remake of it to rip off the American Godzilla that came out. But yeah, that's
rip off the American remake of a property that they didn't come up with.
Yeah.
The politics behind it are kind of questionable. For a kaiju, for a non Godzilla kaiju movie, I think this was a pretty unique entry into it. It's one of the only ones where the monster is humanoid. And did well enough to get its own sequel. I'm sure part of it was motivated by the fact that King Kong versus Godzilla was originally, before it got brought to Toho, was supposed to be King Kong versus a Frankenstein type monster. And then King Kong Godzilla does pretty well, so Toho probably had the thought process of, well, why don't we do a Frankenstein type monster? It's a public property, let's roll with it. And I think it was pretty good having the element of Frankenstein lore meets the new sci-fi genre of the new sci-fi subgenre of radioactivity. And to be honest, I'm surprised more American movies didn't do that. You got these public properties, these horror elements that people know and love, introduce the newfound radioactivity to it.
Yeah, it is interesting at the time when the Frank's Hammer was kind of doing their Frankenstein thing at the time, and then Japan comes in with this one, which I didn't know until much later, that War of the Gargantuas was a sequel to this, but that's one I haven't seen since I was really young. But we'll get to that later, maybe. Like I said, I really thought the radioactivity angle was really interesting, combining that with Frankenstein, where, he was essentially kind of reincarnated. We're seeing like a sort of a teenage Frankenstein who's not only dealing with being, this weird mismatched monster, but now he's radioactive and he's growing. It definitely felt like they're trying to sort of emulate the Boris Karloff, childlike Frankenstein, to the extreme where he's literally a child, like this overgrown child wandering through a city.
That sounds like a movie that I almost picked for this month.
Teenage Frankenstein?
A child, a monstrous-sized child going through it.
Yeah.
Honey, I blew up the baby? You were going to do that one?
Yeah, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. I picked it. Jokingly. I didn't stick with it.
I said I would have allowed it.
I know, but I felt like, I don't know, maybe down the road we'll do Honey, I Blew Up.
I think the theme of that can be non-monster giant creature movies, like giant human movies. You got that. You got the incredible, what's the one with the amazing colossal man and Attack of the 50-Foot Woman?
Ant-Man,
yeah.
Yeah, I guess Ant-Man does count.
Yeah, he's kaiju now. He's Marvel's resident giant man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I I wasn't saying it so much as a joke, but I found something better to talk about, I think, or more interesting to talk about.
I think I brought this one up to James. I think it was not too long after the first trailer dropped for Godzilla vs. Kong, and I just got thinking about some of the old movies that came out in between Godzilla Raids Again and King Kong vs. Godzilla. Oh, I know what it was. Krista and I were talking about Mothra. She's kind of developed an interest in that. We haven't watched it, but she loves the music from the Godzilla King of the Monsters, the redone Mothra theme. And so her and I got to talking about that. And so that's where I got the idea. It's like, you know, do a theme of the non-Godzilla kaiju movies. Because those are pretty good in general.
If you ever want to spice up the night, you just put on the Mothra soundtrack.
Yeah, nothing gets Krista going like putting on the Mothra theme.
This is getting really personal here.
Hey, I'm just happy I'm engaged to a girl who, you know, thinks that the whole idea of it's pretty cool in general.
That's true.
She indulges me. We already got our advance tickets to go see Godzilla vs. Kong. Unfortunately, not till April 3rd. So I'm going to be shutting off Facebook and YouTube for like 3 days, so I don't get tempted to read any reviews or anything like that.
It's so smart, because you're gonna have people ruin the ending for that movie.
Of course, and whether or not I'm ignoring any theories on whether or not Mechagodzilla's in play, or whether it's a Godzilla Ghidorah clone of some kind based off the severed Ghidorah head. I don't really want to know. I don't know. I hope it's Mechagodzilla. I think that would be really cool. So, but I'm not giving in to any theories on that. So I will be going silent for 3 days, but we're seeing it at the Dolby Theater at the waterfront. Biggest, loudest experience possible.
That's pretty cool.
It's gonna be
special. I haven't been in a theater for over a year now.
Yeah, I haven't been. Me too.
Well, if you guys go see it, they do book. When you book your seats, they automatically block off two pairs of seats on your right and on your left. So we're in the middle, so they've already blocked off six seats total.
I kind of like that in general, because I've been to the movie theater where there's not a lot of people there, but somebody still chose a seat like right next to me. And I'm like, this is just... just feels uncomfortable. Thanks, person. You're like, oh, there's five people in the theater. I'll sit next to this guy.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I got the good seat because I got here first. Go find somewhere else. Your seat's probably not going to be as good. Or just go one, put a buffer seat in between.
I'm like tempted to see it in theaters because I'm vaccinated, but Lexi wants to see it, and she hasn't been vaccinated yet, so we're probably just going to watch it at home via HBO Max.
I feel safer going into a theater than going into a grocery store or a Walmart. And, you know, I still go into a grocery store from time to time. You know, and I go into Sam's Club for work. You know, I have to go on all these runs for the office, and I get tested weekly. So that's why in the theater, I feel like it's not going to be quite as crowded.
Yeah. Test everybody at the office every week,
yeah.
And if not more, and then everyone's making stupid runs all over the place for things that they bring back into the office.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
Well, yeah. I'm jealous, and that's good. I think it's worth holding out for probably the better experience. I myself don't have a terrible setup, though.
Yeah. I don't have HBO Max, so that's why I'm doing computer. I feel like I'd have more to say on this movie. I mean, you know, do you guys want to talk about War of the Gargantuas, since that's a sequel?
We're getting into that next week.
Gotcha.
I don't even know if James watched it.
I didn't watch it yet, no. Yeah, I mean,
I was gonna say
these are two. That one I'm very curious about, because, like I said, I haven't seen that since I was really young. I think I saw that even before I saw the Godzilla movies. But
okay, Brad Pitt.
What?
That's Brad Pitt's favorite
movie. War of the Gargantuas.
It's what made him want to be an actor, he said.
Interesting choice. It's Tim Burton's favorite of the kaiju movies. He talks about
this,
it.
This one, Frankenstein Conquers the World, is one of Guillermo del Toro's favorite kaiju movies, and Baragon's one of his favorite kaiju.
Interesting. I would not have pegged that as being one of del Toro's top kaiju movies.
I see it, because you know, he loves the Universal monsters, and he definitely seems to have a special affinity for the Frankenstein monster. Like, he almost made a Frankenstein movie, among many of the other movies he almost made.
Have you ever seen this Spirit of the Beehive?
I haven't. No,
never heard of it.
It's a Mexican movie, and it's wonderful. It's about this like little village, and they get in Frankenstein to watch for like the first time in their village. It's pretty cool. I think it's one of Del Toro's favorite movies as well, and probably because it's like more personal to him and his experience growing up.
Yeah, I could see that.
I think it's Mexico, not Spain. Maybe it's Spain. I don't know.
No, I'm looking at it now. That is a good idea. That's a pretty, and it's whimsical.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Not a kaiju film.
No.
Or a Universal monster film, but
it almost kind of sounds like something a Spielberg would make. You take something, it's almost like the Spielberg, like a Universal, like a monster version of Hook. Kids go in search of something.
I liked in this too, where there were, I guess it goes along the idea with what you guys were saying earlier about people just kind of already know about Frankenstein and his lore. They understand how he works, because they had that theory, if it is Frankenstein, cut off a limb, it'll grow right back. That's kind of his thing. I enjoyed that, because I thought, I wonder if they've ever cut someone's limb off and it wasn't Frankenstein, and then they had a problem. But I also did kind of like the like reanimator vibe when he broke out of his chains, and then they had the hands that was like walking across the cell floor.
Yeah, when did that happen in the movie? Did that happen? He broke out of his chains, and in order to do that, he had to basically rip off his own arm. When did that happen? Because the hand was normal size.
Starting to get big. He was starting to get big, but I don't know what size he was supposed to be compared to the people, because he still kind of looked to be their size. But they locked him up because he was getting too big, and then they show up the one morning or whatever, and he's missing, and they bring up how the shackles haven't been broken. And they say, oh, he must have slipped his hand out. And then his hand just like slowly crawling across the ground.
Maybe he, I don't know. I think it was another forced plot point. They wanted to illustrate how if you cut off a limb, it grows back, without actually having the scientist go in and cut the monster's limb off.
I mean, it's a little bit like Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. The kid doesn't grow up all in one thing. He just slowly gets bigger throughout the movie.
I mean, to go back to the arm cutting part, I mean, I did like all that, but and I'm using air quotes here, scientists in this movie choose violence often, almost too much. Like when Frankenstein's kind of leering at that woman, they immediately like pick up a chair to fucking bash him. And then they're like, and then the ones that's like, oh, we need to see if he's a monster by cutting off one of his limbs. So let's fucking do it, guy. Like, he was way too cavalier about, you know, he's way too excited about being able to chop off another human being's limbs. And then at the end, where he's just like, you know, at the end, he's just like, yo, we got to kill him. Like, that's all we got to do. You know, like he's. That one scientist like was really blood. I mean, they all were, but that one was a little bit more bloodthirsty.
I don't know. Maybe their focus was on curing cancer, and they don't fuck with monsters.
Yeah, they're like, this monster could he could do it without an arm, right? He has two. it was a good I did kind of like that reversal of the one who, you know, wanted to kill the monster. He you think he's gonna die in that avalanche at the end, but the monster ends up saving his life. I thought that was a good touch.
Yeah, again, it was almost kind of a redemption of sorts. He's the one who wanted to kill the monster, but then the monster saves him. And at the end, during the fight, he wasn't too keen on, you know, we got to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you hate when the monster that you want to kill saves your life? Just ruins right. everything.
Just really, it sucks when the monster is the one that shows that you're an ass. You know? When the monster shows that you're the monster.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and like, that's the thing is, you know, what makes the Frankenstein monster unique is, you know, he has this sort of compassionate side. Like, he's not a raging monster like he's often portrayed. And I thought this film did a pretty decent job at showing both sides of the monster, that he's, you know, sort of childlike and unpredictable and violent, but he also has this, you know, soft side. Literally savage. At the end, he's dressed like a caveman. Like, he literally has a savage side.
I want to know how he learned to build a trap.
Oh, yeah.
I want to know why his clothes got bigger, too.
So his dick didn't hang out.
So it's like the mystery of the Hulk. Why the heck did the Hulk always break his shirt, but his pants never broke? That was always a joke my dad would bring up.
Because kids aren't ready for that type of Hulk.
What interesting was, how is it, you know, the kid, the heart grows into a person, and 15 years later, this kid is found. Why is it a kid, and why is it that the kid grows big and doesn't get older subsequently? Stays basically just a feral child. Maybe, I guess you could say, grows into a young teenager, but that might be what he is, but...
I thought that too. Like, he starts growing, you know, it seems like he's growing really fast once they find him, because he's just like regular normal human size. He seems to have aged naturally up to that point, but then he just starts growing, you know.
It's because they were feeding him? I mean, were they giving him, they were feeding him better than what he was eating on his own? They were giving him all this?
Yeah, he got like nutrients or something, and then
I was wondering that too, because they said he's, you know, craving protein because of how fast he's growing, and that's what I was wondering. I'm like, oh, so
that's what it was, protein. They say the protein's making him like excel at size or something. So he, I don't know what he was eating before, but apparently he didn't have any protein in his diet. He was a vegetarian or something.
There's not a whole lot of nourishment in killing rabbits and dogs, I guess. How about that one scene where the kids all come into the room, they come into the classroom all excited, and immediately head right to the spot where the dead rabbit is, see the dead rabbit, and then all run out. There's no teacher, no nothing. They come running into the room, it's clearly daytime, they look right at the ground where the dead rabbit is, exclaim that it's a dead rabbit, and immediately scatter.
I do kind of dig that moment where they come in, and, you know, they see this dead rabbit in their classroom, and they just kind of scream and run out. Like, it's a good, you know, sort of out of context cutaway there. But I mean, this film has a couple of those moments like that, where it's just reaction shots from people you haven't seen before.
Yeah.
I like the reaction shot of the tree that lands on those people's cabin. Mm-hmm. And then they're just what the hell? And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to know their story. I think that would be a good opening for a movie. Just these people enjoying their camping trip out in the forest.
And then a goddamn tree
just crushes. Yep. And they're like, oh shit, it must be that Frankenstein thing that people were talking about.
Even when the government's going around saying, you know, we're declaring martial law, you know, the creature, the monster doesn't come out in the daytime, but it comes out at night. So, you know, no one's out at night. People then all, you know, everyone's lined up along the streets hearing the cars making this announcement. But then people just start running across the bridge. And they want to be like, where are you running to? It's still daytime. Where are you hoping to go?
I do like back in the day, you know, when everyone got their news from military convoy.
Yep. One thing I noticed about this movie right away, this movie, the soundtrack for this movie ended up being the recycled soundtrack for Godzilla versus Gigan. And I only know that because I've watched that. That was my first Godzilla movie. So I watched that every day when I was a kid. I destroyed the VHS. So I could pick up on those score notes, those movie score notes immediately. But and this movie ended up being one of the many recycled scores used for Gigan.
The score did sound familiar watching it. I did wonder that. I'm like, I wonder if they reused, you know, a score from something else for this one.
And I think other way around.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess looks like they did. Because, you know, that's something else if you'll discover if you watch a lot of these old Toho movies, is they reuse scores and footage.
Sound effects, actors,
yeah.
Set.
All those reused actors, it's like the BBC. It's like, oh, hey, look, that guy was in that other movie.
Yeah.
The actress, Kumi, that's her name, right?
I believe so, yeah.
She was in a movie, 1966 movie, What's Up, Tiger Lily, an early Woody Allen movie.
Oh, yeah.
And she got to star alongside two Bond girls, one of whom was the princess turned Martian in Ghidorah, the Three-Headed Monster. I mean, talk about a pretty good trifecta there.
It is. I just watched that one and talk about batshit crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. That one was a unique one. The idea of having the espionage scene going on in the background. The assassination, an interesting subplot, something different.
Yeah, I mean, it's yep. Like, I guess for me, watching the evolution of the Godzilla franchise, where it goes from, you know, being dark and kind of sober to, you know, getting more and more lighthearted. Then you got this one has this espionage subplot, and it's got aliens, and it's got Godzilla and Rodan bickering amongst each other. Like, that's really when it becomes more of like a, and I'm not bashing it because like I fucking love these movies, but it's really when it becomes more of like a kids franchise and like less of a, you know, more of a sci-fi, like a straight serious sci-fi franchise.
They took it away from the adults.
They kind of did, you know, it's, you know, which I feel like, you know, the writing was on the wall where, you know, this franchise obviously became more and more popular. And it's making more and more money, so they're like, well, we might as well just start appealing to you know, the biggest audience we can, and, you know, make them more kid-friendly.
I failed on my... I was going to start watching a lot of kaiju movies starting at the beginning of February, and I rewatched barely any, but I did see new ones. Like, I saw Son of Kong, which I never saw before.
I've never seen that one.
I liked it. It's kind of like what James said, where it gets more lighthearted. I don't know the timeline because it came out the same year as King Kong, so I don't know if it's like 6 months later or what.
But, I think it takes right afterwards. Carl Denham's being sued by everyone in New York, and so he just leaves town in hopes.
Yeah, that's the plot.
Finding fortune to help pay for his lawsuits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's looking for gold. And he finds it, and then they, like, befriend Son of Kong, which he generalizes that he must be the child of King Kong. And he's like, something about there must be a Mrs. Kong. We never see Mrs. Kong.
No.
And then he comes up with the plan that he can use the Son of Kong to help carry out the gold when they find it. I watched The Mysterians, which was really weird. But with aliens,
that's another one I've always wanted to see, but I've never seen it before.
And I watched Varan, which the only thing that was disappointing about it was the only one version I could find was like the American dubbed version. And I, from my understanding, it was like heavily altered. It's on Amazon Prime, which I've seen Amazon do this weird thing where I've searched it and it popped up twice. Like, there were two different posters, two different like files, I guess, for the movie. And I tried both of them. They were the exact same version. Mysterians is kind of weird. I don't really think you're missing out on
that. That was kind of curious about.
I've seen that one. I saw that one at G-Fest because the lead actor in it was our guest of honor that year. Of course, he was in tons of Godzilla movies. But that was one of the ones that they showed. I thought that one was pretty. Actually, I don't know. I mean, Mulgaera was probably the cooler part of it.
Yeah, the aliens come down and they want to like steal human women to repopulate their world because there isn't women anymore, or they're all dying off. So it's got like a weird kind of rapey vibe to it. Besides being kind of weird, like they were just like the aliens were very low tech. They clearly were people, and yeah, the one monster they have in it, he's not in it very much. But then there's this Frankenstein Conquers the World, which I haven't seen either. So I don't know. I got like 5 new ones under my belt for this year.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, I did always want to see Mysterians because Mulgaera got he got rebooted in the 90s Godzilla movies, but as a good guy. So that's really the only really reason I wanted to see. I was curious to see what the old one was like. But
I love some of the effects. I think I might be thinking about Rodan a little bit too. I was about to bring up the giant egg, and I'm like, that's Rodan. You're thinking of the wrong one. Mysterians, I guess, was okay.
Yeah, I watched one of the many movies I watched during lockdown. I watched Veron the Unbelievable. I bought it at a con years ago. And I was like, oh, shit, might as well watch this movie.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to watch. I don't. Was it the Japanese?
No, it was the American
version.
It was god awful.
Yeah, that's what I watched, and all the credits were coming up, and I'm like, this can't be right. Like, I can't be.
The American version is like, it's very American. It is very 1950s pro imperialism. It's not.
The dubbing's like slightly racist.
Well, you know, they shot new footage with, you know, American actor. So you got that going too. So it's pretty bad. I mean, like,
well the old Raymond.
Yeah, like Veron himself is a pretty interesting monster, but you know, it's not really enough to save the movie. It was one of those ones I'd always wanted to see since I was a kid, and I found it at a con, and I'm like, oh, cool, finally. And you know,
well, I'm gonna watch very soon the very first Godzilla movie that I ever watched that I had on VHS. Was Godzilla 1985, and I picked up a copy of Godzilla 1984, which is the Japanese version of it, because there is a hell of a lot of dubbing and things going on in that, so I don't really know how much of the original movie I've actually seen, but I always liked the idea of, like, the ticks or whatever the hell it was that came off of him were, like, murdering people first.
Yeah, that's an idea Cloverfield ended up running with. Yeah, that's one I haven't seen since I was a kid either. I'm hoping that since Criterion came out with the set of the Showa era Godzilla movies, that they'll come out with the 90s era ones next.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of wish there was just like one place for all of them.
Because I've seen all the 90s ones, which start with Godzilla 1984. Even, you know, technically, most people call them the 90s ones because most of them came out in the 90s or the Heisei era. And I haven't seen all of the Millennium era ones. There's a couple of those ones I still have to catch up on.
Well, I'm sure I've seen less than you have. Yeah, I watched them like here and there. And then a couple years ago, when Criterion Channel came up, I watched all the Showa ones, and then what? And then they had a couple other things there too. You were talking about the invasion of the Astro Monster. Like, I watched that. War of the Gargantuans was on there. Just like a couple other ones. I was like, hey, if it's there, I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah, I mean, most of these, I watched as a kid growing up watching TNT, during Monster Vision, they'd show all these old Japanese movies, among many other ones.
See, I remember watching them too, but never tuning in. Like, I don't know if I've ever tuned in to watch like a whole movie. Like, I would watch it, and then later I found out it's like Son of Godzilla or something. You know, like, I have no idea what I'm watching. I'm like, this is weird.
I think my parents, you know, at the time, they knew what kind of movies I was into, and they knew that movies about big monsters fighting would hold my attention, so they put them on for me all the time.
Humongous Ape,
yeah.
Did you see that on Twitter for Kong Skull Island? No.
What's that?
It's a picture of Brie Larson with her like flare gun, and I forget the tweet said something like my favorite three genres of movies, and it says action, adventure.
Oh wait, yeah, I did see that. Yeah, I mean,
it's like I love Humongous Ape. That's definitely one of my favorite. Genres. Yeah, me too.
I mean, this is all this whole month they're really enough to be a humongous ape fighting a humongous lizard.
Yeah. And then there was that good, I saw a meme that you shared too, which was like the gorilla sitting there and it looked like it was giving like a TED talk. And it's like, I'm going to try my best, guys. But it is a giant, like, radioactive dinosaur I'm biting. So,
yeah. I'm pretty hyped. But yeah, rewatching all these old ones has been, it's definitely been interesting kind of seeing them all the old ones and like the effects and sort of the tropes that we're getting.
Yeah. I picked up and I got to watch all the like Ultraman movies or TV show. I didn't buy any of the movies, but I have like six seasons of it.
Yeah. I always wanted to see Ultraman when I was a kid. And then I watched some when I was like, you know, late teens, early 20s. At that point, I think I'd kind of like grown out of it. You know, I was like, oh, this is kind of weird.
There was something I saw on the internet recently. It was a clip from, I'm guessing, the show, but there's a monster and it jumps and it like way over jumps over Ultraman and like smashes into a building and he like just turns and looks at it and then like shakes his head in like disbelief.
I mean, hell,
you don't know physics. You idiot.
He's just like, he just has that face like, you amateur.
I mean, look at the way Baragon was jumping all over Frankenstein in this movie.
Yeah, that was a pretty interesting one. You don't see that very often. I think they even sped up the frame rate or slowed down the frame rate at certain points to make the movements faster.
I went into this with a mindset of like, oh yeah, Baragon's and he's a classic kaiju, so he probably doesn't have, you know, ray guns or whatever, and no, he's like shooting fire. I'm like, oh, you know, never mind. Baragon, he's a multi-talented kaiju. He can jump,
send the goddamn woods forest on fire,
and a fire that barely singes the monster or his clothes.
That's because he's got protein, Jim.
Yeah, you know, protein must have, that radioactive protein must have seeped into the shirt fabric. Maybe that's why it got bigger with him.
I do like the idea of someone's pet. It would be cool if it was a radioactive rabbit, though. It was like, you've been eating my children for far too long.
It's got to avenge its children.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I like the fact, one of the good things about these old sci-fi movies, whether they be kaiju or American, they did not need to go into a lot of detail to make sense of the story. And they can just start right away. Open up with the Nazis, getting the heart, going to Japan. Hiroshima happens. Cut to 15 years later. There's a feral child run out. And, you know, bam, we're right in the story.
I also love, too, when scientists, when people generalize something or they guess and everybody around them is just totally fine that's an acceptable answer, where they're saying like, well, how does he get around? And they're like, nah, he clearly travels underground. And everyone's like,
that makes sense. You are a doctor, you're a scientist, so we'll accept that.
But it's like the son of Kong, like, this is Kong's son.
Duh.
Do you know this? Like, he could just be another one, but whatever. Maybe I'm overthinking it.
It was a point. It highlights the fact that, well, you know, people didn't have a Google search back then to double check on these kind of things. You couldn't just go on the internet and check out scientific info yourself. If a man with a doctorate says that this is what happens, then okay, we'll go with that.
It's like the first person that theorizes, everyone's like, yeah, that's it. So if everyone said, I don't know why we don't see them, and another person said, I don't know, probably flies, and everyone's like, oh, fuck yeah, it probably flies. You're right, man.
Yeah, I mean, I did think that during this, where they're just like, what's this new monster? And they're like, oh, okay, you know, he's a species that burrowed underground to escape the Ice Age or whatever. And they're all just like, yeah, that sounds right. I'm like, but that's in all these movies where they're like, oh, this must be this kind of monster. And everyone's like, yeah, you're probably right.
Do they ever have a character in any of these kaiju movies that are leaving Japan? Like, they're like packing their suitcase. I can't take this place anymore. There are just way too many monsters.
Yeah, you never hear about anyone in the Godzilla universe, which is its own. It's a cinematic universe. Toho, you know, did it before Marvel, and Universal did it before Toho, but another story. And you don't hear about people being like, okay, you know what? We're done with this country. Let's just go. The only time I hear about that is in King Kong versus Godzilla. One of the main girl says to her neighbor, she's like, oh, are you going somewhere? And she's like, no, we've decided to leave this city. Huh? How come? Godzilla. Really? Godzilla? Yeah, we just turned on the news. He's on his way. Like, you're just walking out with your son. Why don't you freaking move?
My insurance will no longer cover Godzilla damage, so we're leaving the country.
I just think it's funny that became their solution. And then in Mothra versus Godzilla, they compare Godzilla to a hurricane. It's like, you know, it's gonna happen, just evacuate, you know, get all the valuables out of the way. You know, if you're gonna stay, be in a shelter or something, but you know, it's
they don't want to panic people, you know.
That's like, yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I swear, like, you know, 4 out of 5 Godzilla movies, that one hotel in Japan is always getting destroyed. And I was like, they better have like Godzilla insurance or something, like for how many times this place is destroyed by him.
Hondo probably went to that place and they sucked, and he's like, "Fuck you! Wait till you see my movies," and he just always destroys them.
I think it's just literally mostly interesting architecture, so they're just like, you know, we're just gonna destroy this place.
Well, that's like where I found the trees to be kind of cool, because it wasn't a super barren area, and it wasn't an urban city. So I don't know, just him walking through the trees, and I thought they did a really good job of like understanding that he was as big as he was.
Yeah.
Circling back to Baragon being called a dinosaur, what the heck kind of dinosaur looks like that has the ears that Baragon has, and B, They say it's a dinosaur. How did Baragon get so big? He's a dinosaur. Godzilla was a dinosaur hit by radiation. We can explain that, but Baragon's just a dinosaur who has lived underground for millions of years.
Yeah, they never explained it. And a lot of Toho, they start doing that later. Is they're just like, oh, it's a prehistoric creature. They just leave it at that. They're, you know, where like you said, they do, you know, Godzilla, they're like, oh, radiation made him this way. Whereas, you know, later on, they're just kind of like, oh, they just were always that big.
That's why I like Cloverfield. I don't know what it is. I don't really care.
Yeah, that's getting out of here. And that's one of the reasons why I like Cloverfield so much, to jump on that is, you know, there's heavy implication. You could take it either way, that, you know, it came from space, or that it, you know, it was, you know, it came from the ocean. But yeah, they don't really ever try to explain it. You know, it really leaves it up to you to decide what this thing is.
What are the odds that you would run into like the scientist that would know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
we created it. Be like, what the fuck? I ran into the person that created it.
What? Wow, well, isn't this just lucky? Well, because Cloverfield's about average people. Normal people.
It's like a zombie apocalypse. Yeah. I'm sure something caused it, but I think realistically I would never find out what did that.
Nope. You know, just hear a lot of speculation.
Yeah, that's I think that's part of the reason why I like the movie so much. you know, what endures is, you know, the normal people, and they don't know what the hell is happening. You know, they're just trying to survive. So, do we have final thoughts then on Frankenstein Conquers the World?
I think final thoughts on it. I think it's for a B movie from the era. It's pretty original. It's got a great pace to it. It's only, I think, 84 minutes long. I'd say the only lulls happen in between them searching for the monster and Baragon showing up. But I think starter-wise, out of the gate, it's got a great story to it about the Frankenstein monster's heart, going to Japan, getting hit with radiation from Hiroshima, ties in a little history with the Frankenstein lore, makes it a little more realistic. Other than that, I think Baragon, bit of a shoehorn, but the fight sequence was really good. The actor who played the monster, the Frankenstein monster, pretty good. I don't know if they got like a stunt person, someone who's able to do all of those moves, or probably a suit actor from another movie, someone who's used to fighting with these costumed actors. But I think it's pretty solid for a non-Godzilla movie, being a humanoid base. I think it does pretty good.
I simply love the effects in all these movies, whether they are really well done or maybe not the best. I always kind of find them fascinating, such as the scene where he's in the water with the boat. The boat itself doesn't look fantastic, but you know well enough that it's the boat that all these people are on. It's also fun to watch him gradually grow and get larger. And as far as I know from like the Frankenstein lore, I haven't really come across anything. I don't watch as much as you guys have, where he kind of like regenerates himself. And I liked that subgenre of the Frankenstein monster mutating and becoming something different. It's like, subtextually, I guess, Japan took the property of Frankenstein and literally morphed it into their own thing. And I find that cool.
Yeah, I really like this idea of this mutating radioactive Frankenstein. Like Jim said, you know, it's a really fun concept for a B movie. You know, I like how they did really take this character, Frankenstein, and give him his own identity. And I, like I said, I was really invested in it. I thought this was a pretty good Frankenstein movie until Baragon shows up, and then it becomes like a Godzilla movie. But even then, I really liked this final fight scene between Frankenstein and Baragon. There's definitely an added level where you have a, you know, pretty much a human combatant fighting a monster. But yeah, this was fun. This was, you know, like I said, I didn't really dig it when I saw it when I was really young, but going through it as an adult, I really liked this really high concept B movie story that they gave it. And, you know, just, it was a blast.
It is. It was.
Yeah. And,
and it's on archive.org. Yeah. Bring it up again.
There is available on DVD on Amazon. As well, if you all want to buy it. But yeah, and then next week we're gonna dive into the sequel, which I didn't know was a sequel until much later.
Yeah, I didn't know it was a sequel either. I thought that it just kind of jumped right into the plot. I mean, it is almost a completely different plot than this.
Yeah, I'm very curious. Like I said, I was really young when I saw it. This is basically like watching it for the first time. So I'm very curious to see how it is.
Nice. I watched it in, the last time I watched it was in October when I was going to start my like a horror streak. And then I don't think I watched very many horror movies. I'm a failure when it comes to those things. In my mind, I think, hey, let's marathon these things. And then I work too much. And I don't know. I'm not super.
It happens.
I get tired. But, yeah. That was a good episode.
Thank you, guys. James. And Jim, thank you for joining us again.
Thank you. Always a pleasure talking kaiju and horror movies with y'all.
I appreciate you throwing knowledge at us.
Well, I do what I can. It comes growing up with those G-Fan issues and the Godzilla compendium that I read cover to cover so many times.
Yeah, me too. I still have my Godzilla compendium. It is it's in my bathroom along with other.
Mine is I have two copies. The one I've had since the early 90s is or mid 90s is beat up, surprisingly, still with its cover. And then my dad got me a good one. That's the one that I get autographed at G-Fest.
I only ever read it once at James's house.
That's why it's in my bathroom.
You gotta get it yourself. You could probably find it for a decent price online. You can get it yourself. It's a wonderful read.
I probably should pick it up.
I mean, only
right now I'm reading a book that's about the kaiju movie I'm doing in 2 weeks. Paul Gasari.
If I'm saying it correct. 1985 North Korean fun piece.
And I'm reading the book A Kim Jong-il Production.
Oh, jeez.
Fuck, man.
I bet that it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, the backstory for this entire kaiju monster is wild. So I think it will be a good episode. And I never seen anything from North Korea. So
not many people have. I'm sure this movie is the Room of kaiju movies, I imagine.
Well, I'm excited.
I really hope that at one point the kaiju walks into the city and says, "Oh, hi, Mark."
They do have a really good director and actress that they kidnapped from South Korea. So I don't know. Maybe it does turn out to be fine.
That is a pretty gripping story. The fact that they kidnapped this husband and wife team from while they were in China.
Yeah, they kidnapped them from China.
Yeah, it's pretty gripping.
Well, this is a good tease for that episode then.
Good.
Well, exciting.
Fascinating, and it's gripping, and it's coming out in 2 weeks. I can't wait
to discuss it. But yeah, tune in, guys. You know, we're Cinema Demora. You can follow us on Twitter and find us basically anywhere you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google Play. You can follow me personally on Twitter at James Reinhardt.
I'm at JJMorgan19.
I'm not on Twitter.
Oh, you know, do you have an Instagram or page or something?
I do. I have an Instagram, but it's mostly for my photography. That, man.
Hey, you know.
Well, if anyone's interested in Pittsburgh street photography, JKATZ_photography, JCATS photography.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you guys very much for allowing me to do that.
You are really good.
Gosh.
I think people will enjoy it.
Well, thank you.
And thank you guys.
Thank you, everybody. We are Cinema Demore. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with news and information on upcoming episodes. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, Alexa, or iHeartRadio. It would be greatly appreciated if you subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. We also appreciate feedback, so rate us, review us, and let us know what you think. And above all else, thank you for listening.